Locked On NBA. The biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in Brooklyn to speak with Josh Bass of Locked On Nets about Spencer Dinwiddie's thumb injury and what that means for the Nets' playoff hopes. We'll speak with Tony East of Locked On Pacers about how Indiana is going to cope with the loss of Victor Oladipo. And lastly, we'll speak with Jordan Mailey of Locked On Bulls about the Wendell Carter and Chandler Hutchison injury and the way the Bulls have been decimated by those injuries and other injuries throughout the season. It's all coming up, the biggest stories with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hi guys, and welcome back to another week of Locked On NBA. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I also host the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, and I am the lead analyst at BasketballMonster.com. We've got lots of stuff to talk about. Unfortunately, injuries are the big story across the NBA over this last week. So let's get to it. All right, now let's bring in the host, or one of the hosts, of the Locked On Nets podcast. It is Josh Bass. We had you on last week to speak about the form of D'Angelo Russell, but since then, a major injury has struck this Brooklyn team down. They've been no stranger to major injuries this season. Spencer Dinwiddie out with a thumb ligament injury. Do you want to detail, Josh, the issue here with Spencer and his thumb and what we're looking at in terms of recovery?
Yeah, absolutely, Josh. So Spencer Dinwiddie tore ligaments in his right shooting thumb, obviously very important to a player like him that's reliant on that outside shot and also his ability to drive. Funnily enough, Caron Butler actually reported the news, and it's looking like surgery is going to be on Monday and recovery time of anywhere between 3 to 6 weeks. Luckily for the Nets, it does coincide with the All-Star break where they're not going to be playing any games between February 13th and February 23rd, but still a big loss to a surging Nets team. And Spencer Dinwiddie has probably been their most consistent player this year. And overall, I'd say their second best behind D'Angelo Russell.
Who's going to step up and fill that role now for the Nets with Dinwiddie out? Who was playing not only as a backup point guard, but obviously playing alongside D'Angelo Russell as well as a shooting guard, or Russell was a shooting guard, whichever you want to do it here, playing in 27, 28 minutes a night. Who steps into that role?
Yeah, it's a good question. So right now, I think Shabazz Napier was getting some time as that third guard. He was playing about 20 minutes a night. That's definitely going to step up because he's really the main option off the bench now. So his playmaking responsibilities and his scoring load is really going to have to improve for the Nets to stay competitive without Spencer. Theo Pinson is an undrafted rookie, but a guy they really like, has done a nice job in Long Island this year with the Nets G League team, really improved his three-point shot since his days at UNC. He played against the Knicks on Friday and had a great game, 19 points for him. You're not going to be able to count on that every night, but they think he can fill the void just a little bit and kind of step into the role Napier was playing before, and then also look for Joe Harris, his minutes to increase at the two. I'd say expect him to get about 32 minutes a night just to help fill the gap. So I think between Napier, Pinson, and Harris, that gap will be plugged, hopefully enough for the Nets to survive without Dinwiddie and also Caris LeVert.
Harris is dealing with a minor injury of his own at the moment, I believe. What injury has he got? Is that anything serious?
No, so that's not serious. That's I believe it's sore right hamstring, and he's listed as questionable for tomorrow against Boston. But I think, you know, Kenny Atkinson is seeing the forest for the trees here. Both Harris and Travion Graham are questionable, and I think they're going to sit against Boston team at full strength on the road. They probably know that the chances aren't that good, and they want to kind of just get that load management in for those guys because they do have a back-to-back against Chicago on Tuesday, and that's a game that the Nets definitely need to win and take care of business against a terrible Bulls unit.
Let's talk about something that is, I guess, maybe forgotten by some people with this Nets team in talking about injuries. And we know the Nets are, I don't know what the right word is, sneaky, cautious, secretive in terms of revealing injury information. Just remember back to the D'Angelo Russell knee stuff last year. We just couldn't get confirmed timelines and anything was happening. Where's Caris LeVert at?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I mean, it's like playing Sherlock Holmes trying to get any information from the Nets. So LeVert has progressed to some light shooting as of about 10 days ago. Still hasn't been doing any on court, one-on-one or five-on-five contact work. But I would expect for him hopefully to be back maybe late February. I think that's a realistic timeline. And without Dinwiddie, the Nets definitely need LeVert back. And obviously, it's not something where you want him. But the Nets are very secretive, as you know. So my best guess would be late February. Even with Alan Crabb, just going back to him, and he's kind of a forgotten guy for this Nets team. But they were originally listing him as day-to-day when he first got hurt. And now it's been 20 games, and he's still not close to coming back.
He's had this knee problem for quite a while, and you do worry about this with Crabb. Have they ever actually mentioned what the problem is with it? Like what was the actual details of that injury?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a bruised fat pad on his knee, and it's something that I think no one has ever heard of before.
Yep.
But essentially, I guess the bruise has been a lot deeper than they initially expected, and it's just not recovering. So he's doing individual workouts, but hasn't resumed any team-oriented drills. But hopefully by at least when the Nets return from the All-Star break, as a worst case scenario, Crabb is back. But yeah, it's frustrating to see kind of that he's been very inconsistent with his time as a Net and also hasn't been able to stay on the court as much as our fans would like. But hopefully they can get him back in time. He can help to plug that injury hole left by Spencer Dinwiddie as well.
The other injury that has bothered this team this season is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who's had two groin issues, then hurt his shoulder the other night. He just hasn't looked right. He's taken big steps backwards this season so far. How's that that shoulder injury that he's dealing with at the moment? Is his groin look okay? Is he fully healthy? Like, what's Rondae's situation? Because he obviously, along with Jared Dudley, who have been their two main power forwards this season, are both dealing with problems.
Yeah, Rondae has been someone that even since he came into the league has been very injury prone. He missed over half his rookie season with an ankle injury and hasn't been that explosive since he came back from that a few years ago. But yeah, he's getting a lot of minor injuries. His shoulder was good enough to play against the Knicks, but then he ended up kind of crashing heads with, I believe, Lance Thomas, was bloodied up. He just hasn't been able to get into a rhythm this year. I think he's someone that the Nets will be okay letting go in restricted free agency if a team would want him, because he does have some value on defense with his versatility, but just offensively, he's kind of a higher usage guy for someone with his skill set. Has never been able to stretch out his jumper beyond 16 feet or so, and is pretty inefficient going to the basket. So for this Nets team that's more reliant on their guard play and then having a guy like Jarrett Allen inside who can really finish, Rondae doesn't really have a place next to any of those guys.
Do you think this Dinwiddie injury impacts the Nets' playoff chances to a significant degree, or do you trust that Atkinson and the combination of guys like Pinson and extra minutes for Harris and Shabazz Napier can keep them afloat? Because they're significantly far ahead of the 7 and 8 seed, and then the Wizards, they're like 5.5 games ahead, or 5 games ahead of those guys from the 9th seed. So they've got a bit of a cushion there. Do you think that those players can step up in Dinwiddie's absence, who some people were talking about as a borderline all-star? I didn't see it for Dinwiddie personally, but that is a significant loss, and these players, they're going to have to step up to I guess keep them afloat until these guys return.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, losing Dinwiddie is a huge loss. The guy was averaging 17 points a game, very efficient shooting, had many games looking at the Rockets especially where he simply carried the team to victory, and losing him, this was already a thin Nets team as is, and I think it's going to get even thinner, and you have to hope that Shabazz Napier and Theo Pinson can step up. But D'Angelo Russell, he's been on a hot streak recently, but I think it does affect their playoff chances, because he could easily turn into the player he was the first half of the season and kind of going back a couple of years to that inconsistent player. So I think this does affect their chances. I'm still bullish that they can make the playoffs because, as you mentioned, they are 5 games up on the Wizards in Detroit. But I think once Dinwiddie comes back, I'd be surprised if they're still the 6th seed. I think it's more likely that they're barely holding on to a 7 or 8 seed. And I think it's a possibility that they're going to evaluate how these next 3 or 4 games go. And if the offense is just continuing to struggle, maybe looking to acquire a veteran point guard that can just be a stopgap for not that much assets going out. So looking at guys like Shelvin Mack, maybe on Memphis, who they've fallen out of the mix. I think DJ Augustine as well. If Orlando can get a point guard upgrade, they'd be willing to trade Augustine to a team that's looking to be in playoff contention. And then even Jeremy Lin, I know it's not going to happen because the Nets just traded him, but he would be perfect as a stopgap to plug in because he knows the system while Dinwiddie is out.
I was going to just bring up Jeremy Lin. I thought that would be he would be perfect actually for this team to fit into that role. But yeah, of course, given the fact that they just dumped him in that salary dump earlier in the season, it does seem unlikely. But this Nets team's been exciting all season, Josh. Some injuries have tried to derail it, but it hasn't really taken them too far off track. And then, of course, when Dinwiddie and then LeVert return, it's going to be key as they come into the difficult portion of their schedule down the stretch. Josh, we'll have that covered for you all over on Locked On Nets. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA again in probably not as exciting times as it was last week.
Yeah, no, it's always exciting to talk to you, Josh. The Nets have still won six in a row, so even this Dinwiddie injury can't stop the good vibes that are happening in Brooklyn, and appreciate you having me on.
No problem. Now we bring in the host of, or one of the hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. It's Tony East here to talk about, of course, the news that happened during the week with Victor Oladipo suffering a ruptured quad tendon injury, which is going to keep him out for the rest of this season. And we hope it doesn't, Tony, but it could, I guess, impact some of the preparation for next season as well. Just first of all, you know, detail what the recovery is like for this injury for Oladipo.
Yeah, it's long. Everyone I've talked to says it's somewhere between 6 and 12 months, though the more conservative say 8 to 14, just because an injury like this for athletes usually is a result of just use, which means it just takes longer to heal. And, of course, as you go forward, it's going to be use again, so it really has to be 100% when you return. But the last NBA guy who had it was Tony Parker. Most of you have seen those comps by now. He was 34 in the 2017 playoffs when his quad, the same thing, and he returned by around Thanksgiving of the following season. So he missed basically 7 months, a bit shy of 7 months. So if you put Oladipo on that timeline, that's August area, and that's before the season even starts. So if you want to look at it from that scope, he can kind of take his time almost to have a little extra time to even make sure he's up to full strength before the season starts. But it's a lot of rehab and rest, really, just because, it's literally connecting one of your muscles to your kneecap. And now he doesn't have that. You could see the dent in his leg when he was laying on the ground. And it's going to take a long time for that to build it back up all the way.
Oladipo's had troubles this season before this injury with his knee. There was some, I guess, unsubstantiated reports going around that to get it actually fully right, he'd have to take the whole season off. That obviously didn't happen. He said he was fine coming back. Do you think that there is any correlation between this quad tendon injury and the knee? Not that it was the same injury that was keeping him out before, but when you have something that's not quite right, your body tends to compensate in other areas. Has there been any talk that perhaps the fact that he was playing through this knee injury could have contributed to this?
Definitely. There was an article in the Indy Star where Tyreke Evans talked about how he would tell Vic sometimes, like, man, if you're too sore, don't play, when they were getting knee treatments together. And some of the doctors around the city and state have talked about, just how, like you said, it can be like a compensatory thing where, you're used to going up off of two legs, but now you can't. You have to put more emphasis in other places, and that it causes your body to be more susceptible to injury. Jay Michael, one of the Indy Star writers, said one time Vic was struggling in a game going up for layups, and Nate McMillan actually yelled at him and had to emphasize going up off of his right leg more because Vic was too focused on going up off of the other leg. So I think that there is a lot to that theory that A, he was playing on an injury, or at least it was at one point, and that caused him to favor his body slightly differently, and B, that him doing that caused his injury to either happen or be worse than it could have been otherwise had he either rested longer or just not played.
So this Pacers team has been one of the success stories of the NBA this season, a lot of people praising what they've been doing, rightfully so, but this is huge to have their best player gone for the rest of the season. I actually, coincidentally, or I don't even know if coincidentally is the right word, but the day of, just before this injury, 4 or 5 hours before the injury, I put a poll out or a question out on Twitter saying, this was sacrilegious to think before, but is it possible that Miles Turner is actually the most important player on this team at the moment? And then Oladipo went down, so I guess we're going to see how true that can become. Is there a possibility that's the case? Because when Oladipo was out at the start of the season, they just kept humming along.
Yeah, so the flip side to the first 11 game stretch without him is the schedule is just a joke. Magic, Bulls, Kings twice, Suns, Wizards, Lakers, Jazz twice before they got Korver, and Hornets all in that 11 game stretch. So it wasn't like they were really chugging through impossible competition there. But to be fair, they were 0-7 last year and Vic didn't play. So to go 7-4 was a marked improvement. And then to focus on your Turner aspect of the question, you know, it's really hard with Turner when you look at whatever he's averaging now, like 13-6 or 7, and say like, oh, this guy is so impactful. But if you, you know, had a stat that existed that was points saved on defense plus points scored per game, Turner would be way up there because his defense is so incredible. And in those four games he missed earlier in January, the Pacers gave up just astronomical numbers. Boston scored 135. The Cavs, who have no, you know, really solid offensive players, scored 115. Toronto dropped 121. It just was a train wreck without him out there. And then he comes back and they immediately hold the Suns to 97 and the Mavs and Hornets under 100. Like they did, you know, his impact is just so obvious on that defensive end of the floor that you could easily argue that he has, you know, one of the biggest impacts on the team, if not the most, compared to the hobbled Oladipo that they had at the time. I think compared to 2017-18 Oladipo, it's not even close. But there was definitely an argument, and there's definitely some validity to the argument that you made that, you know, Turner has the high impact. And now without Oladipo, you know, him and Sabonis and Thad Young are the three guys competing for that top spot. And the fact that they all play in the post is very fascinating to see how they're going to navigate that.
Tyreek Evans has moved into the starting spot next to Darren Collison, meaning Aaron Holiday now moves into that Tyreek Evans role. Now, Tyreek has been, to say that he hasn't been the same guy in Memphis is a gross understatement because he has been significantly, significantly worse. And I tried to figure out what was actually going on with that last season. And obviously, the role he plays on this team is significantly different to what he did in Memphis. He's been bothered by knee injuries. He's had a couple of treatments this season. Of course, that goes all the way back to his time in Sacramento. Those knee problems, which have flared up again this season. The first time when Oladipo got out and Tyreek started, he didn't necessarily light the world on fire. The first start this time, it wasn't necessarily his best game there either. Is he going to need to provide a 70% Victor Oladipo facsimile, or is it just going to be other guys like Collison going from 27 to 30 minutes and Corey Joseph stepping up and those 15, 16 minutes of Aaron Holiday coming in and providing that? Or is a lot going to be resting on Tyreek's shoulders?
I think it's going to be more by committee than on Tyreek. You know, like you said, Collison played 31 minutes in their first game against Memphis in the post-Oladipo era, and he actually played really well. He had 18 points and only 5 shots. He's always been a pretty efficient guy, but now with more lead ball handling duties, you know, they'll try to get him and his high free throw percentage to the line more often. Corey Joseph can play the 1 and the 2, so I'm sure we'll see more of him. He played more minutes than Evans in this game. And Holiday's a rookie, so the expectations for him can't really be set at anything more than just like not sucking, but he does some okay stuff. Pacers fans really like watching that guy, myself included. So he does some good stuff on the court. I think they're going to try to use all three of those guys plus Evans, you know, to pack in as much of the Oladipo impact as you can possibly have. With Evans in particular, the first time he was playing was in possibly his worst month of his career in that November. You can't state how bad he's been this season compared to the rest of his career. It's insane. Some of it's that he doesn't really fit with the principles of the Pacers just running a lot of sets and slowed down stuff. He's more of a free flowing, quicker play kind of guy, which it is what it is. You know, if he doesn't fit, he doesn't fit. But on the flip side, he had PRP injections right around Christmas time, and then after Christmas, he actually has been pretty good in about 9 of the Pacers' last 12 games with a little less knee soreness and a little more belief from Nate McMillan that he can make the right decision. So perhaps the combination of belief from coaching and less knee pain will lead him to be closer to what he was last year than the guy he was this year. But the first game, like you said, in Memphis did not show early signs that that is going to be a correct prediction.
Yeah, you're right about his recent form. It's been significantly better before that last start where he did struggle. But yeah, prior to that, he started to look like, even in 15 minutes a game, the guy that we saw in Memphis last season. So it's going to be interesting, this team. It's going to be hard to see them fall out of any sort of playoff scenario given how far up they are. But one question before I let you go, Tony, is will this team be buyers or sellers at the trade deadline or not active at all?
If they do anything, they might sell off one veteran just because, you know, like you said, they're locked into where they are anyway. So getting a little worse doesn't really impact your long-term plans, even though realistically they're probably not going to win a first-round series. But if I was a betting man, I would bet that they make probably no moves at the trade deadline.
I would probably think that is most likely. Of course, Tony will have all that covered for you over on Locked On Pacers if they do make a move and to see how this post-Oladipo era exists in Indiana. Tony, thank you for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Yeah, Josh, thanks for having me.
Now I'm joined by one of the hosts of the Locked On Bulls podcast. Jordan Maley is here with me to discuss this Chicago team who is really, really struggling. Lots of troubling things coming out of this organization. And one thing that isn't helping their cause, or maybe it is helping their cause if you're looking for them to tank and get a high draft pick, is the amount of injuries that are occurring in Chicago. Had a couple of big ones to their two first round selections from the last NBA draft, Chandler Hutchison and Wendell Carter Jr. Carter is out for almost definitely, Jordan, the rest of the season with that thumb surgery, which he was initially likely to have, and then he was viewed as day-to-day, and the ligament was intact, and then it was viewed again, and the ligament was actually torn. Are we going to see him again this year?
No. I would bet everything that I have in my bank account to say that we're not going to see him for the rest of the season. Yeah, what's weird about Carter is the initial fears when they brought him in was that either there was a fracture to a bone there, or that there was soft tissue damage, or there was a ligament that was torn. And then they had a second opinion done, and then they said that there was no soft tissue damage, and so that they moved him to day-to-day, and so that coming off of that road trip that he was going to be able to play in Miami when they came home. So everybody was like, okay, that was kind of weird. That's interesting. Okay, so you know, everybody wipes their sweat off of their forehead and they're like, okay, Carter will be all right. Then he gets a third opinion from the hand specialist from Chicago. And then, of course, sure enough, there's a tear in his ligament there, and he's recommended to have surgery. Obviously, surgery is up to him, and sure enough, he does have surgery. The timetable for his return is 8 to 12 weeks. Well, if it's pushed all the way to 12 weeks at the point of him having surgery, that brings us to the second week in April. And by the second week of April, we're at the end of the season. So, yeah, definitely not going to see Carter. Definitely unusual, though, if you think about Chicago in general. You think about Denzel Valentine, go all the way back to the beginning of training camp. Denzel Valentine's injury started as a two-week injury. Sprained ankle, high sprain in his ankle. They said 2 to 4 weeks as an evaluation. Obviously, all of us here in Chicago knew that that was kind of we knew it was more severe than that. Denzel Valentine had ankle injuries in the past. Instability in his ankle ended up making him have ankle surgery and miss the rest of the season. It's been injuries that have stacked up all season long. And I think the misdiagnosis of these injuries have caused us to be all very concerned about the severity and what's kind of going on with them. And what's frightening about Carter's injury specifically was this was pre-diagnosed and they said that it was chronic. So whether Carter was dealing with this all season long and it just hadn't been picked up, so he had extended something in his thumb and there wasn't anything that was picked up in an MRI or an X-ray and he was just playing with it. And all of a sudden that, you know, when he went to support his weight in LA where he had injured it, that was just kind of the injury that had put it over the top and something had been torn there. Ultimately, this injury is a huge blow for a rookie that the Bulls really needed and something to cap off a season that we were hoping to keep him fully healthy. But yeah, and now we get the news about Chandler Hutchison as well is a huge bummer for this team.
With the injury misdiagnosis, it's a real common theme around the Chicago Bulls team. Boylan came out with a weird quote saying that they're the best medical staff he's been around, which is a weird thing to me. Who's misdiagnosing it? Is it the Bulls medical staff who is making these poor judgments on them? We're seeing a lot of injuries happen in the closing seconds of games for this team on the back of big minutes in huge blowouts, so some of that has to be put on Boylan. You know, what's causing this problem here? Because this medical staff does not have a good reputation. We know about the Luol Deng scenario years ago. We know there was mistrust with Derek Rose and this franchise. We had the Nikola Mirotic appendicitis issue, which left him losing a ton of weight. Look, what is actually going on with this medical stuff?
Yeah, I try to be very careful with this. And I think everybody around the league, you know, no matter what team that you cover, you try to be very careful because a lot of us, you know, none of us have doctorates and none of us are doctors or professionals and none of us are looking at these guys' injuries. And you can only do so much, and you can only do it by what the player is telling you. And if a guy is only telling you how much the pain is causing him and what's hurting, that there's only so much you can do. And in Hutchison's case, you know, he said that, you know, the pain was only felt like it was a jam to his toe. And so if he's saying it's only a jam and whether or not it was unclear, and even Casey Johnson had reported this before the game, he said it was unclear whether or not he had let the medical staff know that there was something going on with it or it was just general soreness. and he was willing to play through it. And, you know, it still sounds very unclear whether he let them know that he wanted to play through it. And Boylan had mentioned before today's game against the Cavaliers that he wanted to be out there. And so to me, it's like, did you really need to push Hutchinson this far to get him out there and play against the Clippers on Friday night? Or could you let him rest and say, you know what, let's reevaluate this. We don't need to push you out there for 41 minutes on an injury that, yeah, maybe you do play it on the safe sides considering you're at the bottom five in the standings. And, you know, like you said, if you isolate this incident in one single incident, you could say, yeah, you cut the Bulls a break, but you stack up the injuries over the last 5 years, the last 3 years, even the last 10 years, then you start to question a lot of these things. And, you know, even the Carter incident, just in the last 2 weeks, the diagnosis is in 3 days' time. We're getting three different timetables on him. And so it's just very bizarre. And I just find it very strange that he was playing on a hairline fracture in his right toe and played 41 minutes on it. And, you know, they said, too, that playing on it didn't make it worse, which is true. It just made the pain worse of it. So that's why they were able to go in and do an MRI and an X-ray on it, too. It's case-by-case basis with each player. But each player's injury being a little bit different, the timetables on those. So certainly it does not look good for the Bulls medical staff. But yeah, it's weird. And when it's to your core players, like Lauri Markkanen's injury and Zach LaVine being injured for a certain amount of time and Chris Dunn's injuries and Wendell Carter Jr. and now Chandler Hutchison, it all adds up. And Bobby Portis, too, you throw him in there. And some of these just come freak accidents, you know? A lot of these are coming in game, and you can't blame the medical staff for some of them, but others it's like misdiagnoses and timetables being off. It all is just very bizarre to me. So I think questions definitely need to be raised inside, and they're certainly being raised by Bulls fans and people that are writing about this team every single day as well.
It's definitely a concern, the amount of injuries that do occur, but yeah, not all of it can be placed, not all the blame can be placed on medical staff or any, but it is just a lot of stuff that is adding up with this team. It's making it hard for this team with these young players who are starting to, you know, form themselves into nice roles and show a little bit of, you know, form on the court and development that they do get. You know, this development portion of their careers derailed by these sort of injuries. It's not great for Bulls fans to have to then go and watch lots of Robin Lopez post-ups at times. And we've got, you know, 38 minutes of Wayne Selden in today's games. But yeah, there, I guess Selden is a younger player that still has a little bit of development potentially going his way as well. But it hasn't been a great season for the Bulls at all. Lots of questionable things going on with this team. But I guess some of these young players at least showed enough in those early portions to give a little bit of hope to this franchise. Jordan and Matt will have all of that stuff covered for you over on Locked On Bulls throughout the rest of the season. Jordan, thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Josh, thanks for having me as always.
That wraps it up for another episode of Locked On NBA. After you finish listening to this show, make sure you're checking out your favorite team's Locked On podcast. And the best way to do that is by telling your smart speaker to play the podcast Locked On and then insert the team name there. Locked On Celtics, Locked On Nets, Locked On Pacers, or Locked On Bulls, whatever team you want to hear across the NBA or NFL and even Major League Baseball. Just tell your smart speaker to play that. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and follow the podcast network on Twitter and on Instagram at @LockedOnNBAnet. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.